Hi, good morning and welcome. This is Seek Sustainable Japan. I'm JJ Walsh here in Hiroshima, joined by two very special guests today, Lauren and Andrea. And we'll be giving a preview talking about the wonderful MinkaCon conference event, which is coming up in November, and some of the other activities that they're up to, even a tour of events in America, which sounds really exciting. So thank you guys so much for joining once again.
Thanks for having us.
And Lauren, you have a special guest on your lab. Who is this?
This is Miru.
Miru.
She's not one of our many cats. I'm visiting friends. And I've known Miru for 10 years. So
she's lovely. I know that you're a cat owner, so being with a cat while you travel is always nice.
It is.
Now, on the Instagram, I noticed that you had this lovely picture of all of you founders of the Minka Preservation Society. So before we start, just introduce the other people that can't be with us today.
Absolutely. So working from screen left is Derek Cameron Bliss. He's our IT and back office and the guy who kind of makes everything work. Next to him is Marcus Consolini. He's the president of Daimon Brewery and he's our finance director. That's me in the middle and Andrea. And then the far right is Vincent. And Vince is our sort of organizer, the one who got our license, who got our nonprofit status sorted out, who sort of handles the legal logistics, things like that. So,
and you already had an event this year in the town that Vince is in, right? Miyama, isn't it?
Nearby. We had Vince's up in Miyazu, but we've had two events actually. We had our first one in April in Keihoku, and then a second one in Miyama in June.
So wow, you guys are busy.
We are busy. Yeah, we kind of hit the ground running. And as soon as our NPO status came through, it was sort of like a green light just to go forward and make things happen.
That's great. And then before the MinkaCon event, which is November 7 to 9, is that right? Yeah. Do I have those dates right? And it's in Aichi, a beautiful location. Now, Andrea, that's your local area, right?
It is. I'm about an hour away, but it's a place, Shinshiro, which is in Okumikawa, which is a really, really beautiful, as you mentioned, JJ, a really beautiful part of Aichi. And I'm there all the time. So even though I don't live there, I spend a lot of time there. And as you remember, I think, of course, 2 years ago, we had a very similar event at the same venue. So we're going back to sort of known territory in a place that I think, we all like very much.
And we have Natasha joining us on YouTube. Great to see you, Natasha. She says, hello, everyone. Nice to see you all. It's raining in Vancouver this evening. Oh, too bad. It's still really warm where I am in Hiroshima. It's almost like a nice summer. It's definitely not autumn yet. We don't have autumn colors. How about where you guys are, Lauren and Andrea? You're different parts of Japan right now.
Yeah, I'm on Sado Island at the moment, and it has felt like fall until today when it went up to 24 degrees, but it is raining. And I read that at home on Noto Peninsula, it's 80 degrees and sunny today. So definitely not fall weather.
Wow. Andrea, how about you? Because you're in Aichi, which is a little bit more north.
Right. But it's the same in Aichi. It still feels a little bit closer. You're getting into autumn, but certainly still a little bit of humidity, little bit of feel of summer. But I think, by the time it's MinkaCon in early November, then of course it will have cooled off. And Shinshiro's a little bit cooler anyway. It's a bit up in the mountains. And
I'm looking forward to coming and seeing all the autumn colors, because I expected, and a lot of guests coming to Hiroshima definitely expected to see autumn colors already, but it's later than usual because it's been a really long summer, right? But I'm sure in November for the event, we're going to see some beautiful ones in Aichi, right, Andrea?
I would think so. And, you know, and it's such a beautiful area. And we're trying to encourage people that if they can come a little bit earlier, stay a little bit later. And on our website, we've put some images of things to see and do and a link with a lot of information about the area, because I think it really will be a very, very beautiful time of the year. And of course, where we're going to be located, the Minka Con, it's in Aichi Kemi no Mori, which is Aichi Citizens Forest Park, I think is the English. And that's a beautiful place as well. It connects with the Tokai Nature Trail, and it's, you know, it's a really quite a stunning setting.
That's wonderful. Now I'm showing images from the website. We'll talk a little bit more about the Minka Con, but before that, both of you are going to the States and doing kind of a Kominka, Minka, traditional Japanese houses event tour in the States. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm leaving tomorrow, and then I think Lauren is leaving maybe shortly, a few days after, I believe. Mm-hmm. And this is under the a kind of an umbrella platform that we've created, which is called the Kominka Preservation Alliance, and it's made up of four organizations that work very closely together. Of course, Minka Preservation Society, and then Tota Komten, which is in Shinchiro, are very good friends. And then Kominka Collective, which is another organization that I'm part of. And also Kominka North America. So we're going to be really all over the place, starting in Martha's Vineyard, and then two seminars there, two seminars in Boston, one in New York. And then we don't have it on the flyer here, but we'll go to near Seattle and we'll attend the Timber Framers Guild and give a talk there and have a booth. And then we'll fly down to San Francisco and have a seminar there. So we're going to be very, very busy. That's all in 2 weeks. So it's going to be go, go, go. And then we come back and we have MinkaCon. So we have a lot going on, a lot of exciting things. And to our delight and maybe a little bit surprise, we're finding that people are registering for the seminars in the States in quite large numbers. So it's really good
news.
That's
fantastic. We had a great comment from Wendy. Great to see Wendy Bigler here. Oh my gosh, I'm having so much trouble with my light. Sorry, folks. Saying great that you two are out there spreading the Minka joy. It's really exciting. It's not just in Japan where we have enthusiasm for old houses, but definitely in the U.S. there's a lot of people. And Andrea, you've been working with the U.S. market for years, dismantling beautiful traditional houses here, sending them overseas, working with collaborators, and sometimes they even come for the Minka Con events or events here as well. Tell us a little bit about that collaboration, Andrea.
Okay. We only disassemble and relocate Minka and other structures, also temples, temple gates, shrines, that are going to be demolished. If they're not going to be demolished, if there's any chance that they can be saved where they are, then that's what we're very keen to do, of course. And so I think for the past 4 years, we've been doing that. And one project I'm very excited to tell you about, and this is exciting for a number of reasons, but one of which is that the Kominka Preservation Alliance, you know, this four-member group that's our kind of our umbrella platform for this seminar series that we're doing, every member organization has been involved in this project, and that's the saving of Natasha Minka in Fukui. And that's been under the due to the incredible work of Haruo Nishio-san, who I'm sure many people know is a master roof thatcher and just an incredible person in terms of being so active in the preservation of, you know, old houses, particularly in his case, thatched roof houses. And so when Nishio-san, who has a long relationship with this particular minka, learned that it was going to be demolished, he just really, really got busy and worked very, very hard and pretty much single-handedly saved it from being demolished. And then our groups have been involved partly in supporting crowdfunding, fundraising for that effort, and then also arranging for it to be sent to the Japanese, I'm going to say the name wrong, but the San Diego Japanese Friendship Garden in San Diego. So that's already starting. The dismantling is done. And now the Natasho Minka will be sent to Aichi and also to Gifu, where some repairs will be made. Then it will be put in a container or maybe a couple of containers and sent to San Diego, where it will be rebuilt. So that this incredible house,
You have to send the artisans as well to rebuild it, right? I love hearing about these projects. And of course, your keynote speaker, he's also going to be talking about a thatch house, not renovation, but taking apart in Japan and rebuilding in Jamaica. Is that right? I mean, that's amazing. So it's not and just America, awesome. It's all over the world.
Yes, Chris Orstrom also, like Nishio-san, is a really, really long-time person who's been involved in a range of preservation efforts. He's a former chairman or chairperson of World Monuments Fund. There he is. Just an absolutely lovely person and an expert in preservation. And so the Jaminka, as he calls it, that was another project that our organization was involved in. It was a minka that was going to be torn down, a big minka, beautiful minka that they just could not find. Despite really noble efforts, it was impossible to find an owner for, and it had been vacant for many, many years. And so Chris offered to disassemble it. Two of his timber framers came over and did that with our team. And now it's in Jamaica getting ready to be rebuilt. And in this case, unlike the Natasho House, which is going and we will be rebuilt pretty much as is, this minka, the Jaminka, has been somewhat reimagined because of termites and things like that, the difference in climate, as you can imagine, between Jamaica and Niigata. It's been necessary to do a little bit of reimagining to make it so that it will be happy there and won't be eaten up by termites.
That's great.
Yes, but he'll be one of our keynotes.
Yeah, that'll be a great to hear his insights. Hopefully, see some pictures of how the project's going. I had a great talk with Alex Kerr about building a Thai house, but with so many common elements to minka houses in northern Thailand where he's living. And it's just fascinating to make these parallels around the world. It's not just traditional Japanese culture only, like there's so many parallels to relevance for how people want to live in other parts of the world as well, right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, another keynote speaker you have coming up at the MinkaCon is Miyoko Demai. Can you tell us a little bit about her, Lauren or Andrea?
I'll let Andrea continue. She's been the main bridge with the WMF.
Okay. We're also so excited that Miyoko Dume-san is coming. She was CEO in Japan, I believe, of Tiffany's, and did a lot of work there in Kanazawa. And now, quite recently, the World Heritage Fund or World Heritage Fund has set up a Japan committee, and so she's the, I believe, executive director or executive representative of that organization. And my understanding is that World Monuments Fund, even though they didn't have sort of an entity or a legal entity, I guess, here in Japan, that they've done 17 projects and now they're on project 18, which I believe, Lauren, is maybe a little bit more in your neck of the woods if you want to comment
Yeah, just a little
about
bit.
that.
They've raised something like $400,000 to help two areas of Noto Peninsula that were affected by the earthquake. So there's a project in town of Kurishima and another one in Wajima, renovating temples and older buildings that were destroyed or partially destroyed. So that's really exciting for Noto.
That's great. I read on the description on your website for Minkakan, the idea of architectural heritage is cultural memory, that losing these old houses is losing Japanese culture. And that's kind of a foundation of why you guys are so passionate to do these kinds of projects and to give these seminars and talks and collaborate with other people. Is that right?
Yeah,
Exactly.
absolutely. I think so. And I think it's quite timely. I mean, we don't want to turn this into a political discussion by any means, but at a time when, the question of foreigners living in Japan is suddenly a question, I think it's important that foreigners are some of the people working the hardest to preserve traditional Japanese identity. So I think it's possibly good timing from that perspective as well.
Absolutely. There's been big discussions. Benton Homestead, for example, in Omishima, there's a really big difficulties going on for people who have, in the last few years, come into rural areas of Japan with so much enthusiasm and using the business manager visa, and then all the big changes, which is going to put all of their work in jeopardy and maybe even push them out of Japan, although we really hope not. So these little changes sometimes really negatively impact rural areas, which we're working so hard to redevelop and to bring people back in, right? So
Yeah,
it's hard
exactly.
not to get political when it affects us so much, people who are invested for the long term here, right?
And people are paying attention overseas. Like when people register for the US seminars, there was a bit of a questionnaire, and people could also leave comments. And I think two or three people have actually addressed that. Like, this is something we've been planning to do, but we've been reading about these changes. Is it still something we'd be able to do? So it is important and relevant, and something hopefully that will get sorted out in a way that's
I hope
acceptable
so.
to
And
all parties.
there is a wonderful thing about Japan is there is this strong vein of fairness, you know? And so when you look at the cases of people who are so actively rebuilding rural communities, being so good for the other neighbors, the economy, and tourism in rural areas, which we need so much more of, and collaborating with other local Japanese who want to do that, looking at their cases and then deciding, like, not making these sweeping rules for thinking of people only in Tokyo or only in the cities, which, the rural area situations are so different, right, than the big cities. So,
Very
yeah,
much so.
hopefully, fingers crossed, sanity will prevail, eh?
Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed.
And it's a bit ironic, I think, because something that we hear from our really wonderful partners across Japan, their Japanese partners, is that they're so happy that so many people with diverse roots are involved in the preservation movement. And so that, you know, this may affect those of us that are part of diverse communities, when in fact, you know, there is quite a large, I think our numbers are quite large and quite dedicated. So, yeah, among many other things, that's a downside to this movement.
Mm. Yeah. Another recent event, of course, was the Osaka Expo. And I saw on your Instagram, you were talking about Alex Kerr doing a talk about beautiful Minka restoration and renovation and the preservation of these traditional architectural mm-hmm. styles. Did you both have a chance to go to the expo?
No, I didn't.
Did either of you go?
I went as part of the event that Alex was at. It was the Cool Japan Awards.
Very nice.
Advisors to that group.
Wonderful. It looked like a great talk. How was it received? Did people have a positive reaction? Of course, Alex is an amazing speaker, as usual.
Yes. Yeah, no, definitely. I think there are about 300 people in the room, and then I think it was recorded. So, yeah, it's definitely a highlight.
I hope I can watch that. I hope I get access to it someday. But also, there's been a lot of discussion in the newspaper every day about Save the Ring, this beautiful outer structure of the whole expo, which has been such a highlight for everyone visiting.
Oh, I know.
And the whole question of whether it can be saved or reused, mm-hmm. the plan at the moment is just to destroy it and only save a small section. So we're really hoping it can be saved. What a beautiful, like, functional piece of architecture that has so many elements of traditional Japanese design in it, right?
Well, you could build probably 24 new houses out of that ring. It could be a great example of how you can combine traditional Japanese architecture and still end up with more contemporary housing. It could be donated to architecture programs, to construction schools. I was actually going to talk to John Stollenmeyer about it when I see him at the event. Like, he's got a school. I'm sure he would happily receive, you know, a chunk of that. And there's other programs going on. It just, it would be so wasteful if they just destroyed it. At the very least, it would make great firewood. But even that would be a last resort.
kind of a waste of such beautiful wood. Exactly. So, I mean, even the arguments of leaving it where it is and making, like when you have an Olympics, you build all these big buildings, they have other uses after the Olympics. We saw that in London. We saw that in loads of places around the world. So why not leaving the ring there and letting it be somewhere that people could go and revisit and be a structure used for other events and functions is another possibility, right? It looks fantastic.
The plan is to build a huge resort casino on that land. So that's sort of the reason they were able to hold the event there in the first place, as I understand it, that once it was done, then construction would begin on this casino. So I suppose it's up to the architects and the designers of the casino if they feel like the ring can be incorporated into their vision.
It sounds like a very unique, beautiful Japanese casino hotel to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Also, I think that against the backdrop of Kominka and now these days shrines and temples as well, being torn down, you know, all the time, every day, that preserving it would send perhaps some kind of a message and also would help in establishing something of a collective memory around that structure. And not preserving it sends sort of the opposite message that we'd like to have sent, I guess.
Well, especially Absolutely. In a country that is striving to have sustainable goals and has this long, deep respect for nature, especially wood. So, I would think the optics on destroying it would not be in their favor.
Plus, such a wonderful point of pride. that this beautiful structure was made with traditional techniques made in Japan. Where can you see anything else like this? Well, you can't. I mean, that's something to argue for preservation as well, right? Is that it's just such a point of pride. I love it.
And when we consider that in 2019 or 2020, that Japanese traditional building arts, and I think maybe particularly highlighting carpentry, woodworking, was listed by UNESCO as an intangible cultural heritage, it all goes hand in hand.
Absolutely. On my tours in Hiroshima, I take people to beautiful Shukeian gardens. And in the gardens, which was sadly destroyed completely in the bombing of 1945, they found tea houses from other areas of Japan and took them apart and moved them and beautifully rebuilt them for our gardens. And so these are stories I tell every day when I do tours. And everyone who visits is just blown away by that idea that things could be fitted together without nails, with the preservation of the integrity of the building and rebuilt so beautifully. And it just, it's such a wonderful realization that that is possible. And that is traditional Japanese culture, such a unique, beautiful point of appeal, right?
Exactly.
When this is maybe a little bit off topic, but for example, the Natasha Minka that was recently disassembled, you know, it's a huge structure, it's thatched roof, and it was disassembled in less than a week. And when we reassemble Kominka in Japan or elsewhere, the reassembly itself takes, you know, just a few days. You know, as long as they're documented carefully, of course, each piece of wood is numbered, and then they just go back together like a puzzle.
That's amazing. Yeah. Andrea, I often talk about you because we had this great interview and you told me about all of the ways things are dismantled and every piece is carefully checked before it's packaged up, so carefully numbered, documented, and then all the staff go and they reassemble it. So it's all that planning and organization that makes that possible. But it is just such a wonderful, another point of appeal for Japanese culture is that efficiency and that sense of how to do things in a very efficient way and working as a team and everything. Those are wonderful stories.
Yeah, I
look forward to seeing pictures of this new project, Andrea. Is that going to be available at the MinkaCon as well?
Absolutely. And it's also going to be available when we go off on when we embark on our U.S. seminar series. We're going to be talking about the saving of Natasha House and its future rebuilding and many, many other things as well. And of course, there's a lot of, you know, sort of common points that we'll be touching on at MinkaCon or that will be, you know, sort of part and parcel of MinkaCon. And that also we'll be touching on in our seminars in the States.
That's great. One of the connections also to one of your keynote speakers, she is on the board of Nintendo. And for the Japan Travel Awards this year, one of the places which is on the list, which is being judged for the Japan Travel Awards 2026, is the Nintendo Hotel. Yeah. So that historical building. And I'm really looking forward to talking with her about it and getting her insights about how that building was preserved. It's not a traditional minka, but just the idea of these heritage buildings being preserved instead of knocked down and the value that adds. Mm-hmm. And because that was on my brain, I've been noticing people going to that hotel to have their weddings or their receptions. Like Japanese people love it as a very special place. So we're not just talking about foreigners, weird foreigners appreciating these old houses. It's definitely young people in Japan are really seeing the appeal of these old heritage houses too as unique places to have weddings or special events. So that was really nice to see. I look forward to talking with her as well.
I think that hotel is also part of there's this big Showa nostalgia movement going on. And so that hotel is sort of half early Showa and then half Tadao Ando. So it kind of blends these two, you know, last century, this century. But they fuse the two parts really well together. And
that's very cool. Have you been there, Lauren?
I have, yeah. And we've had when I had the travel company, we had clients stay there a few times, and you know, architect people or you know.
Yeah, very cool. So Nintendo fans, architects, young people, it appeals to so many people. It's fantastic. How are you going to do that keynote? Are you going to have two speakers for the dinner? Is that how it's going to work?
The keynote has now been separated from the dinner. That was feedback we got over the years that it meant only people who went to the dinner were able to hear the keynote. So we've taken a more socialist approach this year, and we have the keynote speaker in the middle of the day on Saturday, which is our biggest attendance day. And then, yes, so Chris will speak first for about two-thirds of the time, and then Miyoko will speak the last part, and then they'll take questions afterwards.
That's great. Yeah. Let's talk about some of the other things happening and the other speakers. So I saw on Instagram you also have Asby Brown and Roland Keltz. Of course, Asby Brown is a favorite of the show. I've had him on many times. And he's speaking, but also he'll be there, I assume, as an author in the book area. Is that right?
He's wearing three hats this time. He's giving an individual presentation. And he actually just called me last night to run it by me. I haven't even told Andrea this yet. But we had a meeting with Asby and Takeshita-san a few months ago to talk about the future of Minka, both Minka as buildings and Minka as our society. They're both our advisors. Yeah. And one thing that came up in that meeting, Takeshita-san mentioned that there's another Japanese Kominka group has this idea of trying to like count Kominka, like to see how many are left in each part of Japan. And they had just gotten started, but it was a little not quite organized yet, and they weren't really sure how to go forward. And Andrea and Derek and I were the three who went, and all three of us were like, wow, that's amazing. Like, that's something we could totally get our teeth in and help with. Yeah, that was the meeting.
So here, showing the picture of Asby Brown and Takeshita-san, Andrea, Lauren, and is it Damien with you?
Derek,
sorry. All at Takeshita-san's house, was it?
Yes.
Ugh. Yeah. He of course, has been a speaker at previous events. Yeah. He has wonderful insights and this beautiful house in Kamakura. I really love to visit someday.
Yeah, you must. And it's amazing because he has the original house, which was relocated, 50 years ago?
'60s, I think, yeah.
And then next to that, he has his Shiguchi Museum, which is also located in a Minka. Mm-hmm. And the original one was originally from Gifu. And the middle one, Lauren, you may know, I'm not quite sure where it was originally from. And on the right side, on the right side, he has what he calls a Bikuri house, you know, kind of surprise house. And it's a surprise because from the outside, it looks completely Western. And then you go inside, and it's completely Japanese, completely Kominka Japanese, and just extraordinary. So we were very fortunate to have our meeting with him there.
Oh, that's amazing. I just recently had my tatami redone, my shoji redone, my fusuma redone, all of these features of living in an old house and supporting these artisans, though, because it is harder to find people who do these things, like the paper on the doors, shoji, or the paper on the doors, fusuma, different kind, or the tatami, which is the straw mats, just for people not familiar with those terms. But it's something I love so much about living in an old house. And for years, I was trying to do it myself, but it was so inferior. And it's so ugly. And I realized, gosh, it's really reasonable to hire these guys. And it's so beautiful. And you're supporting their work, not only economically supporting, but emotionally supporting by hiring them and saying how much you love it, which I think that encouragement is also really important, right? If you're living in Japan.
Yes.
I think so. And I think that actually circles back to Esby and his talk. And so he's going to divide it between, he's still working out the details, but something that is, you know, from Esby territory about the sustainability of living in a traditional house and how we can adapt that to today. And then he will segue into this idea of the Kominka count. And he really wants to work with the audience to solicit ideas and brainstorming and, you know, get people signed up to sort of do a Kominka census. I mean, he's really excited about this, and he thinks this is the best venue that to have at this time to see how we can move this idea forward. So that should be an exciting presentation for sure.
That's so good.
And if I may, I think it's so important that this happens because I think the last government funded or government research happened, I believe, in 2013. I could be wrong. And they found that between 2008 and 2013, and I don't remember the number, but a really, really, really significant number of Kominka were destroyed. And since then, except for maybe in, you know, in small areas, there's been maybe local research carried out, but that data isn't always readily available. So it's really, really hard to know exactly, you know, as Lauren was just referring to how many Kominka there are and the importance of finding out and how many have been lost. Because really, at this point, I think all anyone can do is estimate.
Yeah.
Is there a chance at MinkaCon for people to go in and see some Minka, or will you suggest areas to go and walk around? I think I did last time I came to Aichi, and then you had the wonderful Toda House, I believe, that we also visited. Is that happening again, or can people go and see?
That's a great question. We're right now working out the sort of logistics of this, partly because if a lot of people go by car into one area and there's narrow streets and there's no parking, it's sort of it's troubling to the community. So we're trying to figure out which Minka to see and how to get there. And we have, you know, very various plans, but certainly what's going to happen, one thing that definitely will happen is the sort of highlighting Minka that have been somewhat reimagined in their renovation in terms of using reclaimed materials in very creative ways. And so we'll go and see a couple of very local small houses where that's happened. And then I do hope that we can go and see the Toda Kominka, because that's quite an amazing structure. You know, it's one Kominka that was relocated. It was almost derelict, but they saved it just in time, relocated it from Niigata, and then they combined it with a local Kominka that was going to be torn down, because here in Aichi, the beam structure, just I'm not sure why, but the beam structures tend to be really amazing, just really complex and beautiful. So they put two together to make this new, really quite unique house. So I do hope that we'll be able to go and see that. If we're not able, we're going to have sort of a photo display of it. So one way or the other, people will get to see it and learn about it. And then we're also hoping to see some local, in a very small, and I underline the word very and small, town very close to the venue, maybe some machiya. There's a number of machiya that are akiya. So we hope that we can go see some of those.
And then another speaker I quickly mentioned was Roland Keltz. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah, we're really excited that he's joining us. He's got such a great reputation as an expert in Japanese culture. And what drew him to us this time is that he's half Japanese on his mother's side, and through his mother's family, his grandfather has a beautiful, beautiful, very preserved Minka up in Iwate Prefecture. And just back in March, he went with the International Wood Foundation, I think, and they did a documentary about the house. And his grandfather was a poet, and one of his cousins has been the caretaker, and before that it was his uncle who was the caretaker. But he's really trying to think, like, what to do with this house going forward. So it was kind of just serendipitous that I reached out to him just, you know, in a text, like, hey, we're having this event, would you be interested in coming? And he was like, I would, and this is why. And he sent me the video, and so yeah, we're very excited, and he's excited to have a chance to meet Chris and Miyoko and talk to people in the world of Minka reservation and preservation. And
that's fantastic. And it sounds like his books have focused a lot on Japanese pop culture, the art of Blade Runner, the Black Lotus, so the anime kind of sub-series. Yeah. It's great to have kind of a pop culture, like a new vibe outside looking into Japan, but also that Minka connection from his insights. I think he'll add a lot of young enthusiasm. Fantastic.
I think so. Yeah, he's a great speaker. He's just done events in Tokyo this week that were pretty cool. He had Andy Summers from The Police was in town, and they did some events together. And so yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's really fun. And then if you could share that link with me to the documentary about his family's building, and I'll add that below in the show notes. That would be awesome. Okay. And then, of course, at the MinkaCon, you always have interactive events as well. Kumiko Workshop, it looks like that'll be happening, right?
Well, that happened at Miyama, and much as we would love it to happen again, it won't be happening, but we will be having this time I think we're having even more woodworking, carpentry-related workshops than usual. We're so fortunate that John Stollenmeyer and perhaps Kohei Yamamoto, his partner at Somakosha and Somakosha School, will come and be with us and give some demonstrations. And also Shinichi Mochizuki, who's a local temple builder, very highly acclaimed. He's won international awards for his work. He's quite innovative. And so, you know, there's a lot of respect for what he's doing. He'll also lead a workshop, as will Kesuke Taguchi, who's also a temple builder from Gifu, will lead a planning workshop. And then one of Toda Komten's carpenters, Ito-san, will lead another workshop. We're still figuring out sort of the details about that. And then, as usual, we'll have the mini, what we call the mini Minka. There's a small Minka that's actually made out of a Minka frame, made out of reclaimed materials. You may remember it. So we'll have children each day. We'll spend some time raising the frame and then having a frame raising ceremony. We'll do that. And I have a bad feeling I'm forgetting some of the other things that we have going on, but there's going to be a lot happening in the structure that we call the marketplace. So we'll have vendors and lots happening, but also workshops and demonstrations there as well.
So it looks like maybe in Miyama as well, you had the thatching workshop. Is that happening again? Or
actually, I hope so. I feel very, very remiss because I was just messaging before we started speaking with Nishio-san, and I forgot to ask him if he'll be able to do some thatching, but I'm pretty sure we'll be able to, you know, we'll figure something out. He will be there. Minka Masters panel. He's another one of our advisors. So hopefully he'll be doing some thatching. And if not, I'm sure he'll have a way, you know, to be, teaching us in some way about thatching.
I'll put the link below, of course, to the Instagram and all of your links. I was great watching that little video of making the thatch with him. Mm-hmm. And it looks like a giant needle, giant wooden needle that you put through the thatch and like some really unexpected things. And I don't know if thatch is made differently in different parts of Japan. It probably is. But the thatch I've seen at the tea house we have here, it looks like it's thatched into bundles and then the bundles are connected. And it looks like there it's like loose straw and then it's like sewn together. So it's just fascinating to hear from all these artisans and to learn about all the different techniques. I'm sure there's not only one, right?
Right. And it's different, of course, by country, and the thatch is different as well. And, you know, going back just for a moment to Natasha House, which, and I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, but I'll rein myself in. This house, you know, in Fukui Prefecture that's being relocated to the San Diego Japanese Garden. It's actually really a story of resilience because in the village where it was located, Natasho, there was a huge flood and almost all the houses were destroyed, but this house was still standing. So then it was relocated to kind of a roadside area. And that thatching, when it was relocated, was done by Nishio-san, who's coming, as we've just been discussing. Then when it's relocated to the U.S., Nishio-san is going over with younger thatchers. He's young himself, but also younger thatchers, and they're going to be doing the thatching. And a discussion now is, okay, well, you know, in the U.S., then how are we going to get thatch? That's, you know, how is that going to happen? That's a discussion that's actively happening. One other thing, and then we can get back on topic, is that it's going to be a lot of the rebuilding of this old minka is going to be done in sort of with community participation. So people will be invited from the community, will be invited to come for a few days and spend time learning thatching and actually doing the thatching. And then another group will come and then also plastering and other things. So it'll be very interactive as well MinkaCon. There'll be a lot of opportunities for interchange of ideas and also hands-on activities.
That's great. Also, like at the meals or just meeting other attendees, it's always a wonderful and very inspiring and really fun time to just interact with a lot of other people who are so interested in living in rural Japan or preserving old houses or even just very niche things, like very interested in plastering or very interested in antiques. You know, there's just a variety of people or podcasters or people who write books as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we started having authors the last time in Shinshiro, and we're doing that again. So we'll have, four authors joining us this time. And we'll each do a short reading, and they'll also each have a table in the marketplace. They'll be selling
Lauren, besides Asby, who are the other three? Do you remember offhand?
Yeah, so Everett Kennedy Brown will be one of them, and Ian Maloney, and David Joyner. So they're all sort of, I'd say, Minka adjacent. Either they live in a rural community, or they actually live in a Minka, or they had experience renovating a Minka, and they've all written to some extent, or in Everett's case, written, photographed, and renovated a Minka. So it should be fun. So they'll do fairly short readings, and then there'll be questions and answers with each of them, and then they'll be at their table in the marketplace for whenever they can. So, and then we'll have volunteers at their tables, so people can buy their books and then catch up with them at another time to get it signed and talk with the authors.
So, that's great. I also saw that Marcus, one of your founding members, was interviewed on Outland Japan, a podcast focused on rural travel and rural life in Japan. So that was great. I haven't had a chance to listen yet.
I was interviewed on that as well.
Oh, you were?
And so was Vince.
I didn't see that. I just saw your link to that, so I'll listen up later. Maybe I can get Peter, who does that podcast on my show, talking about what he does. It sounds great.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and it's a wonderful show. It really is. And I think most of his listeners are overseas. You know, it's sort of a window into Japan for people dreaming about a life here. So,
That's fantastic. So we talked about the speakers, we talked about some of the activities, the beautiful area of Aichi. Anything we've missed from the Minka Khan coming up?
We're gonna have amazing food, I think. We there's
Even
nice.
vegetarian?
Even vegetarian.
Okay,
Absolutely.
good.
We're talking
Vegan
about
as well,
that.
I
Yes.
hope.
And some vegan as well.
Yay! Vegan
Yeah.
as well. So the first night is just it'll be a combination sort of barbecue and pizza and just snacks as usual. But the dinner, the second night, we have the chef that prepared the dinner for the first night of the Miyama event. And everyone just raves so much about that food, and Andrea convinced them to come down to Aichi and join us and prepare food for that as well. And then one of our food trucks is kebab, like authentic Turkish kebabs, and they can actually also do a veggie-only version. And they're incredible. They're from Aichi. The wife is from Aichi. The husband is Turkish, but they decided to come up to Noto for a while, sort of to support after the earthquake. So that's when I found them. They were in the parking lot of City Hall one day. My husband and I went over and we're like, "Where did you come from?" Incredibly delicious. We then proceeded to follow them around Ishikawa for the next couple of months, but they're now back in Aichi and they will be serving just the best kebabs, most authentic Turkish kebabs you ever want to have. So they'll be there, and then Andrea can talk about the other. There's another cafe who's coming in person.
There's a local to the venue, quite local in Toeicho, a Kominka Izakaya. I'm not going to get the name right, I'm afraid. It's Tsunenko, I believe, but I probably have, I'm not doing it justice. They're going to come and serve really interesting things, and I've heard that their food's amazing, such as venison tacos, and so I'm very much looking forward to that. We will also have another food truck that will be a little bit more. We'll have craft beer, but also we'll have maybe a little bit more kind of mainstream food truck, hot dogs and things like that as well. So, yeah.
In terms of accommodation for people who want to come to the event, is there still some accommodation lodging available?
I was hoping you would ask about that because there is. It turns out that autumn is the season that everybody goes to Shinchiro, it seems, maybe because of autumn leaves. And it really is such a beautiful place for hiking and exploring and everything. I think that maybe some people have found finding accommodations, or at least accommodations where they're able to book in English, a little bit difficult. But there are still quite a few accommodations, and we're very, very happy to help if someone's stuck. We know it. We're pretty up to date and know that, okay, that place has a lot. This place still has a few rooms. And actually, the venue, if people are open to sharing really large tatami rooms, and by really large, I mean, you know, like 50 people can sleep in them, but there won't be that many, don't worry. You know, sort of divided by gender identity, that those rooms are available for 3,000 yen a night, and they're on PTIC, so people can scroll down to the bottom and they're there. And also, there's an updated list, a PDF on the website that we telephoned each. We have a PDF that has all of the ryokan and, you know, various accommodations in the area. We telephoned each place, found out how many rooms they still have or had. This is, you know, a week ago, so things may have changed. So people can also look there. And then if they're stuck, please get in touch and we'll be happy to help you.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that list on the website right now, but maybe you could send me the link later and we'll put it in the show notes.
Happy.
I ended up coming and staying at a beautiful guest house right in the main area. It's probably booked already. But there are some great choices and it's a charming area. I think I'll be at the main area staying.
You will. Yeah.
So we can enjoy craft beer if we don't have to drive, right?
and craft sake.
And sake, yes.
Be providing some sake.
Any shuttle buses? Like, should people have a car to be, if they're staying a bit away, or is there public transportation or shuttle buses, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's a train. It is a local train, and so it comes from Toyohashi or from Shinchiro once an hour, sometimes during the day, once every 2 hours, because it is quite a rural setting. So car is certainly easiest. But again, if people are stuck, if they get in touch, we'll do whatever we can to make it easy for them to get there. The train station is just right down the road from the venue. It's just a lovely little walk up into the forest park, maybe 10 minutes. But again, trains are kind of, you need to plan carefully. And we haven't been able to arrange a shuttle bus, but we'll do whatever we can to, you know, try to make sure that nobody is stranded, or people that don't have cars, you know, we'll help as much as we can.
Yeah. And I always find people very friendly. And if you've got room in your car, hop on in, I'll drop you off, that kind of thing. I think I was picked up from the train station and taken up. Someone saw me walking and took me last time. Now, you guys have been working so hard. Thank you so much for all of your great work. Is this your last event of the year, or do you have more after MinkaCon?
It's our last thing for 2025.
Can you tell us about 2026? What is already in your ideas? What's in the works?
Yeah, that's another wonderful question. We're thinking about kind of shaking things up in 2026. We'll have a board retreat either at the end of this year or the beginning of next year. And we want to really analyze, like, what are we doing and what is our mission and how can we be the most useful to the community and what is the community and just a lot of questions. So we sort of, when we initiated Minka Preservation Society just about a year ago now, we sort of continued from what had been done before, and that's great, but we feel like there's just a lot more we could be doing and going in different directions and more collaborations and more outreach. So there will be a lot of exciting things happening in 2026, but you'll have to invite us back to hear about them early next year.
Yes, look forward to it. And then, of course, the big question for people who can't come to Aichi, is there going to be videos and things available on YouTube or other online content available?
Yeah, that's a great question. There won't be simultaneous videos at all, but we will be filming some, if not all, of the main presentations and panels. We do not currently have our own YouTube channel, but that is one of the things in the works for 2026, not only for this, but we have all sorts of cool ideas for YouTube channels. So once we get that up and running, then down the road, people will be able to log in and see what they miss.
How's the Wi-Fi at the venue? Is it okay to do some live? Because I'll be there. So yeah. I'll be doing some short live things. I'll try to talk to some of the people there as just doing some short things for my channel. If the Wi-Fi works.
You might remember, supposedly Andrea told us it might be better than it was in 2023. But if you have a strong cell signal, your tethering might be your best option.
And then if not, I'll do short videos and be uploading updates during the MinkaCon. So we've got options. We'll be all right.
That would be great.
In the building, you'll be probably fine. It's not fast Wi-Fi, but there is Wi-Fi. Whereas in 2023, there really wasn't. But if you get to go out of the building to the marketplace or, you know, outside, Wi-Fi is non-existent.
All right. Well, I will figure it out and definitely be uploading what I can. And I really appreciate all the work all of your team is doing. And thank you so much, Lauren and Andrea, for joining and giving us some insights today, not just on the MinkaCon, but on the amazing work that both of you are doing so passionately. So I want to thank you for that as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. Thanks for all your support over the years. I mean, you've been with us from the beginning. So we couldn't have done a lot of this without your support. So thank you.
Oh, pleasure. So happy to be involved. And I'll be on a panel or two anyway. I'll be active
Yes,
as
you'll be
part of the
our
MingCon as
moderator.
well.
Yes, absolutely.
Put me to
So
work. I'm happy to
we
help.
will. We will.
And
I'm
I
so
think
glad you can make it.
we didn't mention specific panels, but if people go on the website, they'll be able to see. And I think we'll make, yeah, we have the schedule up on the
We
website. So you
do.
can see we've got a lot of
We have
great
nine
highlights.
panels this year. So
Wow, nine
we
panels.
took,
So many different
we
insights
got
to take
a
in,
lot
and
of
then
feedback.
so many great people to interact with too.
Exactly. We got a lot of feedback from previous attendees, and then we did a questionnaire asking people what they wanted for this one, and we really took it to heart. So a lot of these panels were like people actually saying, "I want a panel about X." And so there we
Fantastic.
go.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thank you guys so much.
Thank
Thank
you.
you. Thank
And
you. We'll
thanks
see you
everyone for joining.
soon.
And of course, if you joined us live, thank you especially. But if you're watching on replay, definitely ask your questions and comments below, and we will always reply to you and add links that are needed. So please do that as well. Thanks everyone. Have a great day. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.